Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It's the 19th of June. How are you all? It is very nice to be with you on this Wednesday morning. We have a cool show today. Let me introduce everybody. We'll get going here and start the proceedings. And also remind you that you can join in at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany. Bob Griffin is here. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here. Good to see you as always. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is with us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Berkshire Eagle reporter extraordinaire Jen Smith is with us this morning. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, and look, WAMC's Alan Chartok is back. How are you, my friend?
Well, it's an interesting question. The answer is not very good. What happened is I took a med last week. I was somewhat suspicious of it, but I don't need to get into it. I only took it one time. And I ended up fainting on the bathroom floor in the middle of the night.
Yikes.
Breaking the shower door into 1,000 shards, getting it all over myself, being admitted to the hospital in Great Barrington, being shipped up to BMC. Everybody did a nice job. And now back home. To say I'll be here for a little while, it is I have had a major concussion. I wanted to say that only because it was important that the rumors were going around, and I want to make sure everybody knew, and I'll be fine, but it'll take a little time.
Well, excellent. I'm glad you're doing well, it is very nice to hear your voice. You sound good.
Well, I feel bad.
You sound good, but you feel bad.
Sounds like an old joke. Feels good. Yeah. Okay, so I feel bad.
All right. Well, we're pulling for you. We hope all is well, and we're here. Our final big announcement, and I was waiting to make it because, quite frankly, she just got here. But
I have a problem with punctuality.
Really? Hey, everybody. It's the triumphant return. Rosemary Armeo is back with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
I'm not even sure people remember anymore. You do, Joe. Thank you.
I remember. I think we all remember. Alan, how many times do people ask us when is Rosemary coming back?
Every time I go, where's that? What's her name?
Where's that big map?
Where's that one used to be on?
Where have you been? Where are you now? Where are you going to?
I have been for the past 2 years working with investigative reporters in Amman, Jordan, in the Middle East. And that assignment is ended, and I'm going to be reassigned to Sarajevo to work with developing investigative reporters in Eastern Europe and the former provinces of the Soviet Union.
Wow.
I know, it's cool.
That's going to be scary, right, Rosemary?
No, it's exciting. I'm going to see Samarkand and Tashkent and places I only have read about. So.
Nice.
places that I've only known from crossword puzzles.
Exactly. I don't know how long. I want to retire. You know, I have an elderly mother here in Albany. She keeps bringing me back. She shouldn't be living alone. So I'm negotiating with how long I'll go back over or how long I'll stay.
But it is safe to say, and I apologize for my selfishness in saying this, but we've got you for a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. I'm on I took a six-week leave of absence unpaid so I could be here with my mom. So.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. My mom and the radio station.
Oh, there you go.
I called you before I called her.
we should tell everybody that Rosemary's dedication to this business of training reporters in dangerous places knows no bounds, and in fact, she gave up a tenured job at the State University, which is something that is almost unthinkable in these times.
It's so insane, in the words of many family members.
Well, as I describe it, is that Rosemary was the only person that I knew of who said, If Trump gets elected, I'm leaving this country, and did. Yeah,
that's great.
And I would like to stay longer. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to have you back. Alan, good to have you back. It seems like the planets are aligned again. Now I can do a show. Everything's normal now. Good. All right. Let us get started. We'll talk about Bob asked me just a moment ago, he goes, what story are we going to start with? I don't know. I was thinking about Shanahan, and then I was, well, maybe we could do Iran. But let's start with Shanahan, because I think this brings up some good questions as to this thing that I know we've talked a lot about, mm-hmm. which is vetting. But Shanahan withdraws as Defense Secretary nominee. Mark Esper is named acting Pentagon chief. President Trump on Tuesday withdrew the nomination of Patrick Shanahan to be the permanent Defense Secretary. Mr. Shanahan, a former Boeing executive, I'll just let that soak for a second. Okay. Who had been serving as the acting defense secretary announced his resignation as an FBI background investigation conducted on all cabinet nominees was continuing because of his incidents of family violence. Apparently, Mr. Shanahan's ex-wife had accused him of punching her in the stomach, which Mr. Shanahan has denied. There was also an instance with his son and his wife that involved a baseball bat, apparently. The charges were dropped, and he had originally said it was self-defense. Then, after the dropping of that nomination, Mr. Trump named Mark Esper the Secretary of the Army and a former Raytheon executive, yeah. So we've gone from
even better than
one
Bowen.
To the other, yes, to take over as acting Secretary of Defense. He did not say whether Mr. Esper would be nominated for the permanent position, but told reporters he was a highly respected graduate of West Point and Harvard and predicted that, quote, he'll do very well. Rosemary, do you want to start? I feel like just for all time's sake, you should start.
Yeah, I mean, it's a management style. He doesn't. He's looking for people who will do what he wants, and I don't like what he wants to do. So of course, I don't like the people. But it is a valid way to run the government, and he does not want to vet it. That's the bad thing, is that he is not vetting people carefully enough. I cannot imagine what that man was thinking, saying, yeah, I'll go up for this office. Did he think that they would not find out about the son beating up the wife with a baseball bat and the punching in the stomach? Did he think that that would stay hidden? That kind of floors me. So it just kind of contributes to an air of incompetence and carelessness.
So let me add a question to that, Rosemary. It is interesting that Trump has so many actings. And in the beginning, mm-hmm. we all thought actings were going to be, not a good thing. However, an embarrassment. However, I have come around to the idea that maybe acting is what he wants. He
yeah,
doesn't
I
care
think it
whether
is.
They're confirmed.
It's deliberate.
It is, because it, by keeping everybody acting, he keeps them on their toes, and he can replace them with less political consultation with Congress. And frankly, it means that none of his people need to go before Congress to be vetted. I mean, so basically, we're reducing Congress's oversight role by the way he's running his organization. And the sad part is that, you know, the question I have is that he was vetted for the deputy secretary position. Why didn't this come up in the initial vetting process? Because that's a big gap, and it tells you that there's a bigger problem.
Do we know that it didn't?
I don't, but I mean, all of a sudden, it seems like it's a tsunami of bad information is coming out. And my question is, where was this when he was up for
initial
confirmation?
That's because of the press, though. The FBI won't say whether they had it or not, which could be that they did. It's the press. That's the tsunami.
Well, all these records were public.
Yes,
exactly.
I mean they're all right there, sitting there in the court. I mean, FBI certainly could
I'm
have.
I'm sure
gotten,
the FBI had yeah. it.
He generated 4,700 pages of numerous filings in King County Superior Court in Seattle. The court documents, which were viewed by the New York Times, paint a portrait of a family torn apart by different views on how the three Shanahan children should be raised, as well as over Mr. Shanahan's extended absences while he was at Boeing.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the choice, too, of legislators. You know, did they choose to question how deeply did they look into it? Did they matter? I mean, you know, that could be because of the nature of these acting folks that come in. And it could, you know, in this particular case, maybe because of the length of time, it did happen quite some time ago. But, you know, I think the other important thing to look at is, you know, like what happens next. I mean, yes, this is an oversight, but I think there's also, you know, what will Esper do? What will Esper bring to the table? I mean, he does have ties to some, you know, corporate industry as well as, you know, a lot of Trump cronies.
Well, Esper scares me, mm-hmm. and that's typical. You know, liberals can should not ever take heart when Trump's appointees or nominees fail because the next guy's even worse. And I think that could be Esper. He's connected to Raytheon. Raytheon weapons have been found in Yemen, which is illegal. But Trump has now is now bypassing Congress to continue selling weaponry to Yemen to the Saudi Arabians. Saudi Arabians and Emirates.
Well,
and
Raytheon also provides a lot for our military too.
And let's remember here, folks, that the Republicans were in control of both houses of Congress during this nomination. Wasn't that right?
Yes.
So that we just saw, you know, that there was no tripartite oversight or double oversight of the president of the United States during that time. Now we have something different in the House of Representatives, but it still falls to the Senate, which is still in Republican hands, to do this confirmation stuff.
Yeah, and the other concern that I have with this is that, you know, Shanahan didn't have any military background. He was supposed to bring business acumen to the Pentagon, right. And Mattis was supposed
other than
to be,
at home, apparently. Right,
I'll just let that one float out there.
Okay, sorry.
You know, and Mattis was supposed to be the adult in the room, and now you look at the top, you know, the top of so many of these cabinet positions being acting or in danger of being acting. It's just a completely unstable bureaucracy right now, and that's bad for this country.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you have so many scary things happening around the world, like, you know, the Iran situation, mm-hmm. or North Korea. I mean, you do want people who are in the roles and know what's coming and have some level of experience there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it's not only just the experience. I mean, clearly Esper does have the experience, the military experience that his predecessor didn't have. But at the same time, it's how loyal will you be to that experience and putting it to good use versus, you know, who your boss is and who hired you. You know, I think, you know, will he become a pawn or a mouthpiece like so many of other people have in this cabinet for some reason? And, you know, will he pledge allegiance to that? And you know, instead of using his own good thinking and background to make military decisions, I don't know.
Well, if he doesn't, he's going to be replaced. We've seen that over and over again in the Trump administration. You don't even cough at the wrong time if you work for Trump.
Yes.
Yes, we've seen that, haven't we? Let me just get back to Shanahan for a second. So the second incident, what?
No, it's just an amazing story.
I mean, mm-hmm. the second incident is that, so this
it is.
I want to know what they disagreed with about raising the kids that resulted in
apparently the 17-year-old son was having a relationship with the nanny who was 36, mm-hmm. and. Whoa. Then he got the bat to go after his mother. But that was after the briefcase incident where...
Yeah, the tug of war.
The tug of war of trying
to
get...
What's in the briefcase?
That's a great question, too.
That should be embroidered on a pillow or a meme. Or what's in the briefcase?
What's in the briefcase? But to the point of, again, of overall, of obviously these were stories that were in the press previously, mm-hmm. And how you don't...
Were they in the press previously?
Well, they would have been in police reports, right?
And divorce records, as Chris said, mm-hmm. they're all public records. None of this was hard to get. I'm sure the FBI had it. But Trump has a repeated history of putting in wife abusers and women haters into office.
That's kind of what I was going to say. I mean, they may have just concluded that this wasn't this wasn't disqualifying.
Correct.
And, you know, some of it maybe you could argue isn't. I mean, the incident between the son and the mother didn't directly involve Patrick Shanahan.
Well, see, I don't know that because I don't know the story.
Right. It just all seems very messy.
Well,
and
it does. Yeah.
It is. And if you kind of read some of the stories, again, like, first of all, just trigger warning, the details are extremely gruesome. And, you know, in this era of domestic violence, it's not something that's an entirely laughing matter. It happens quite often, unfortunately. Again, you know, with this particular case, it's interesting because of the young man's age, and also, you know, he was, I think, set to go to a pretty good university, be a part of the baseball team, things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to be looked at. I think, though, what it matters now, I mean, definitely speaks to someone's character. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's just not even going to be.
I just can't believe that in a country this big, there aren't people who have the requisite military and or business experience without a record like that. I couldn't find one other person.
I think in Trump's mind, if you're a successful business executive, you're qualified. Yeah. End of story.
End of story. Mm-hmm. You're right.
And you know, the problem though is that, you know, if you are a scoundrel magnet, you're going to attract scoundrels, and that's sort of what we're starting to see. And unfortunately, I mean, I don't even think we're getting the A players anymore for a lot of these key positions. I don't even think we're getting the B players. I think we're down to C and D players.
Wow.
Look at Ken Cuccinelli's temporary appointment. He can't get confirmed. He can't get confirmed in a GOP-led Senate because he's so extreme. So you start to see who's coming into the administration, and unfortunately, I think it's going to get a lot worse before
it gets
better. Well,
why would anybody work there? I mean, how many people have worked there and come out better, had their reputation enhanced by the experience? It's like almost everybody leaves in some sort of horrible, embarrassing way. I think he would avoid the place.
Well, Sarah is going to run for governor. That's exactly what Arkansas needs.
Sarah Sanders was out of that stage last night in Orlando.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok is back. Rosemary Arameo is back. We have Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Jen Smith. We welcome, of course, your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'd love to help. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us, too. That God knows that's needed. But you can. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org.
¿Qué tiene mi niña siendo santa y buena? Cuéntale a tu padre lo que a ti te pasa.
The music we're playing this morning is very cool. It is Buica. And they're playing at SPAC on stage tonight at 8 o'clock, and you can find out more by going to SPAC.org. And you can also see the playlist on our website, WAMC.org/roundtable. We have a couple of letters. We'll go to those first, and then we'll move on to other stuff. Dal writes and says, acting appointees are not in a position to offer strong dissent and advice. So that was your point, Bob.
Yep. And not only that, but it used to be that acting appointees were not supposed to do things like realign or reorganize their agencies, although that is completely out the window now.
Right.
I'd just like to say that I don't think that the full confirmed people have a lot of choice about contesting with this president either. He throws them out also.
He throws everybody out except for his own family. I mean, it's sort of this weird oligarchy that we're developing. But the way it was supposed to be is that if you are not confirmed, Senate confirmed in a Senate confirmed position, is that you didn't have all of the authority of those positions. That it was supposed to be a caretaker position, and you were supposed to continue on until somebody is confirmed by the Senate and then takes over.
You weren't even supposed to put a picture of your family on your desk.
Mm-hmm. You weren't supposed to sit, and you didn't sit in the office. Actually, it goes so far as you don't sit in the office of the principal.
Right.
Your picture's not on the wall. You are not the principal in that situation. But right now, what they're doing is that they can't get people confirmed. So, the hell, throw them in.
We got this from Christopher, who says, reporting that Trump is behind in the polls is exactly what he wants. It created a sense of complacency. Democrats also come out to vote or voted third party in 2016, which lost Hillary the election. As long as you report that Trump is behind in the polls, his base will remain riled up. What did the Koch brothers get out of funding NPR and PBS? I believe they influence what you say. Even if it sounds negative of Trump, it may be helping him in a way which isn't immediately apparent, such as creating division within the society. They've been making the liberals more liberal, conservative more conservative, and adds that I'm very happy to hear that Alan is okay.
That's really nice, but I want to say I do disagree with one part of this. I think the fact that there is energy now behind the Democratic Party and the Democrats are so furious and independents so furious with this guy, I think the more that happens, the better off the Democrats are going to be. I don't think the fact that Trump is behind is going to help him. I think it's going to hurt him.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And I also think that, the writer seems to be suggesting that, you know, we shouldn't report the polls because of what they say. I mean, obviously there's an obligation to report what the polls are saying. I don't think the news business is in the is in the should be worrying about what the consequences might necessarily be.
One of the sick geniuses of this president, though, is that he's created this persona and mythology that he's a victim, and it's this constant drumbeat of "I'm a victim," and you know I personally find it really hard to feel bad for him and in all of his privilege, but his base is lapping it up. The question is whether the he's able to grow his base.
Well, that rally in Orlando last night, that's all it was how he was being persecuted and beaten up.
It was a Festivus poll event, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where every grievance that he has, he put on, and everybody in the audience is putting on their grievances. It's that's not a great country. That's a bunch of whiners.
That's an interesting observation, because he always talks about being a winner. I'm a winner. I did this, I did that, it's so common. But he does manage to combine that with they hate me for that, they hate me because I'm good.
Yeah.
And he also appeals...
They have never treated anybody else as bad as this. I'm sorry,
even
Jim.
Lincoln.
He also appeals to an audience that also feels either threatened or marginalized too. And if you examine the language that he uses, he's like, this is a matter of your dignity, of your values. So your dignity and your values are being challenged. And when that appeals to someone, it's just like, that's when you get those head nods and those cheers, and that's when you're going to get those votes.
Tracy takes us to task. This was a private family matter, this regarding Shanahan. This was a private family matter that is now being dragged out for you all to speculate about. Shame on you. This is exactly why he pulled out.
Sorry. This is public record. They used public courts to act out a divorce. And that's the price of living in a democracy. It's not private anymore.
And sorry, if you'll beat up your kids, there's always the possibility you'll beat other people up also. And I think that goes to character.
No, but it wasn't the kids. It was the kid beating up mom.
His kids. Well, whatever. Yeah, I'm sorry.
But the point being is that this is information that I think our point, right, as a group, is that this is information that was readily available and apparently was not a part of the equation in its confirmation, that they either knew about it and dismissed it or... Mm-hmm. They didn't know
about
it,
and both
seem bad.
Well, and this is where I disagree with the writer, is that he stepped forward to be the deputy secretary for the Department of Defense, which is among a handful of the top positions in the world. It's a public position.
Yep.
You knew you were going into it. You knew you were going to be reviewed. You knew that there was going to be a process that dug into every element of your life to make sure that you were capable to do that job. So I have no sympathy for him. He knew it was there. If he didn't want it out, then he shouldn't have stood for the position.
And it's also possible that it wasn't on him. It was also possible the president woke up, scratched his head, and said, out with him.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly has sort of keyed into his dissatisfaction with Shanahan lately, and that was sort of the rumors of who's next on the merry-go-round of being on the outs.
It's just a different version of I want to spend more time with my family.
Yeah.
Deirdre writes, thank goodness Rosemary is back. I missed her incisive, uncompromising commentary. As to Sheehan and domestic violence, the younger generations and women have made it clear that we will not tolerate this behavior from people in the higher echelons of leadership. Whether it's former AG Schneiderman, Trump, or others, this is not going to be allowed to continue. We will vote en masse for the candidates of our choice in the primary, and abusers will be held to account.
Well, and just to be clear, too, the facts of the story state that neither parties involved were complicit. Both the children acted with violence. She was arrested for also abuse, and Shanahan also faced things. So this is a definitely a unique, murky, over many years case.
I still want to read that divorce case.
And by the way,
47,000 pages.
Yeah, the 47,000 pages.
Well, you got 6 weeks, so
there you go.
You might get through half of it.
I have to read the Mueller report. I'm busy.
And boy, am I going to get beaten up for this. But boy, if you can't handle your family, how are you going to handle the entire defense establishment of this country?
That's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, it's not his job to handle his family. I mean, families can get very messy, and a lot of people have messy divorces. I don't think that's necessarily disqualifying.
But it doesn't...
That's true, Chris, but it doesn't usually involve baseball bats and violence.
Right, but
and the police. And the police. I mean, that's to
right,
Alan's point. I think...
I mean, it sounds like some... I mean, I don't want to... Who knows what was happening there? But it sounds like some of it was... that he was an absentee father. You know, he wasn't handling the family at all. He was working all the time.
Well,
that's pretty common for people in executive positions like that.
Sorry.
It's going to be common of
Again,
anybody who works as a
police and baseball bats.
Right, but
and
that didn't
sorry.
Involve him. That involved his son and his wife. I'm not trying to excuse it or justify it, but
Chris, it sounds like you're trying to excuse it and justify it.
Oh, I'm not, Alan. That's your
okay.
He's giving benefit of the doubt.
So if he moves to Alaska,
I'm not giving
governor.
Him the benefit. Look. Look,
no, I'm just saying.
Arkansas,
though,
apparently, they're.
That job's already taken.
Oh, here we go.
Look, I have kids, and I have a family, and I was away too much too, and I understand that if you're away too much, you are responsible.
Well, to be honest, it sounds a little sexist to say that he should be handling his family. Like he's the boss, and whatever he says goes. There is a difference between
Chris,
being the defense secretary and being a father.
Well, he should handle his family, and his wife should handle their family. I guess I left that little part out, but no
She's
cheap
not
shots,
running.
Please.
She's not running for anything. Yeah,
well,
I don't see that as sexist. I think that keeping your family intact and out of the police blotter is something not too much to expect from any public official.
Welcome back, Rosemary.
Does anybody else notice that Alan threw that little bomb in when he's not even here?
Boy, you're really reaching for it now.
All right. Let's go to this letter from John, who our final letter before we go to a break. John says, the issues with Shanahan were known for months, and the administration was aware of them before the nomination. The PBS NewsHour did excellent reporting on the situation last night. It included an interview with investigative reporter Aaron Davis of the Washington Post, who has been reporting on this and interviewed Shanahan. While all three, Shanahan, his wife, and the son, appear to share blame on the many domestic issues, one additional situation includes Shanahan knowingly harboring the son for 4 days while the police were hunting for the son after he beat his mother with a bat. How was Shanahan even in the Pentagon to begin with, never mind getting to a nomination for Security of Defense? Welcome back, Rosemary and Alan. Okay.
And what do you think about that, Chris?
I think that's troubling. I think that's very troubling.
Actually, I found that normal. His son is in trouble for beating up his mother with a baseball bat. He comes and spends time with him, and then they go together to the police. That seems like the most normal human part of the story to me.
I still go back to the fact that I don't even understand why he was nominated in the first
place. Well, that's
place.
The whole
thing. That's right.
I'm not
no
comfortable
experience.
In getting into any of the stuff of the personal of the family because, it is, as Chris pointed out, families are messy, and I get that. But the point also, to Alan and Rosemary's point, it doesn't usually end up in the police blotter. But how did it get to that point?
And
how
I want to know.
The last letter is a good one.
I want to know if Trump's support for Boeing until the last minute, until public outrage dictated otherwise, has anything to do with this guy. That's a conflict to me.
It absolutely is. And if you look at the weapon systems that Boeing is in competition to sell to the Pentagon for billions
conflict.
And billions of dollars, it's just a huge conflict.
Same with Esper and Raytheon,
too. I agree with that as well.
Well, it goes back to the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about all those years ago.
He was so smart.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue the fun. Everyone's having fun, right?
We are.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Jen Smith. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We welcome your letters. Let's move on to some other stuff and talk about other things in the news. So we will spend a few moments, if we can, on Iran. Trump characterizes alleged attacks by Iran on tankers as, quote, very minor. President Trump, in an interview published Monday night, characterized the attacks by Iran against two oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman as very minor, and suggested that the United States might not go to war to protect international oil supplies. His assessment in Time magazine reflected a softer posture than of senior administration officials at the Pentagon and the State Department, as well as some congressional Republicans, as tensions between the U.S. and Iran have flared recently. In the interview, Trump said he would certainly go to war to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon.
What in hell does very minor mean, if you're following me? I mean, what is this very minor stuff? I mean, either they did it or they didn't do it. If they did it, why was it minor?
I have those same kinds of questions.
Yes. It almost risks inviting future attacks, you know, if you kind of downplay them so significantly.
Mm-hmm. And it completely contradicts what anyone else working in that field, like Pompeo, is saying.
My sense is that this is posturing. I mean, anytime anybody puts a mine on my boat, I think it's a pretty major event.
ask the captain.
Especially if I'm in the middle of the ocean. Silly me.
I went to Costco. I picked up some juice boxes for the kids, and I found this mine. Right.
I get mad when somebody scratches my door. So a mine would really infuriate me. I think that they were backing themselves into a corner, into a very tough corner. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to give himself a little more room to maneuver. Unfortunately, the words he's using doesn't equate with the actions that are being taken. If it was a minor event, you don't move carrier groups, you don't move additional military resources. I mean, it's sort of a bunch of empty words to me. Mm-hmm. I also question and like people's perspective on this is that. The Japanese prime minister was in Iran, and I don't know if this is part of some additional negotiations that may be going on, although there is some interesting speculation about whether the Japanese tanker was purposely targeted because he was there and the Iranians or whoever did this was trying to send a real message to Japan. But I do think this is an attempt to be a good cop, which is why we don't recognize it.
Well, also, there's this impression that he's giving out that his people are the warmongers and that he's not. Apparently, to some degree, he wants to get away with that. So, of course, we forget about the fact that he appointed all of those people and that he gave them their marching orders. And if they didn't obey his marching orders, he fired them all. So that's something to be considered in all this.
I think he's spoiling for an excuse. Before she left, his UN Secretary Nikki Haley said, oh, they're violating the nuclear agreement. We've got to do something about it, even though that was later proved not to be true. And now this just seems like the latest excuse. And it's terrifying. That is such an unstable and scary area.
Yep, and we're sending billions of dollars of additional arms to the Saudis, who have been an on-again, off-again ally, if you really look at the history. And that includes nuclear technologies, which I just find fascinating because we're continuing to destabilize an area that, frankly, doesn't need any more destabilization.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you also know when you hear someone like Chancellor Merkel, who's still involved in the Iran agreement, speaking out and saying, taking a more probably the most assertive stance that's been taken by the Europeans, regarding the deal, and that they're also ready to make a move or make a defensive move at that one. So you can't call this situation minor by any means.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here with that, do you think?
What you have to worry about, Joe, is that there isn't a miscalculation. Because that's how wars start. And if somebody says, once the firing begins, it may be very hard to pull it back, especially if you're dealing with nuclear arms.
Well, are we as a country even ready to get involved in this? Okay, so you send 1,000 troops over there to take these, defensive stances or posturings or whatever, strategy you call it. At the same time, you have the president saying that they're going to send more people or should be sending more people than ever to our own borders to handle, what's happening with the migration increases. And, do we really have enough resources to cover that at all, both fiscally and from a human and defense standpoint, while, again, going back to our last conversation, we have an acting leader in defense stepping on, this doesn't look good for anyone, and you don't have the allies that you do. The with Brexit going on, you can't expect that part of Europe to speak up. So, what's really going to happen? And this is something that you can't really address in isolation, I think.
I think
we don't really have
Iran,
strong allies in this right now.
I think the leaders of Iran need to write a very nice letter to Trump.
Full of compliments.
Full of compliments and flattery, and it'll all go away.
It will get you everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But,
I will even draft it for him. I could ghostwrite it.
Sorry, I was starting to cough. I was afraid Joe was going to send me out of the room. Alan's point, though, about the tension, there's some in my mind, there's some interesting connections back to pre-World War I Europe, where, you know, these balance of power and the tipping point came from a country that, no one would have said that's where the fight's going to occur. And I do worry, you know, our lack of what we've done to isolate ourselves from our natural allies, the rise of Russia as an expansionist power again, certainly what China is doing and doing in the South Sea. And then you've got the Iranians who are really pushing hard. It's a very dangerous situation. And if it is not handled correctly, And this is where I do worry about the Secretary of State and certainly Bolton always being more hawkish than the normal human being. We have all of the chemistry for a really bad mixture.
Well, and especially if you look at the state of Iran, which, you know, at the beginning of these, you know, sanction wars, Iran was in good shape. It's by no means in good shape anymore. Their economy was in a really good feel good kind of period, and people were happy. But that's completely changed, and their currency's tanked, and so that puts them in a very precarious position. And they've already said that they're not going to be willing to negotiate. And I think some of the folks who've been in you know, the biz for a while say, you know, oh, that's just Iran being Iran. But I think these are completely different circumstances.
Chris, were you going to say something or am I?
No, not really. I mean, earlier I was going to say to Jen's point about the military. I mean, we have been fighting these kind of endless wars. And, the military is stretched thin. And a lot of soldiers are weary at this point. And to be honest, that was part of Trump's appeal when he ran, was that he said that we shouldn't be involved in these endless wars, mm-hmm. and he criticized the Iraq war, and he seemed to be offering a different, foreign policy path. Obviously, if we get entangled with Iran, that's a totally different thing.
He hasn't gotten us into the war yet.
Hence, right.
This is a very minor thing. He's a bully, so it's all the sable rattling and I'm the arbiter of whether we go to war or not. That's what he likes. This is all another power play, as is keeping all of his employees in an acting capacity. That just all gives him more power.
But there's another part of the impulsiveness that. That's coming home to bite us in the rear end. If you think about what he did over the objections of Mattis and the DOD staff with Syria, where we actually took out a lot of our assets because he willed it rather than a good public policy, I'd be interesting to see both the number and type of troops that we're putting back into the region and what he took out prematurely. And I believe that there's probably a pretty good crossover on those two. And this is where his impulses are really creating problems for us.
That's interesting.
Let us take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and we will welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, and we will continue. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. We have Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Jen Smith. And we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let us start with some letters for the first part of our last half hour together, and then we'll move on to other topics. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Jen Smith making up the panel this morning. Gene writes, where are the troops deployed to the Mideast being stationed now? Does anyone know? We have to add that to the homework pile?
Yeah, I
okay.
do not know that. And
we'll
I was
out.
There. I was just happy to be leaving at this time.
I mean, are they asking where they're coming from in the United States or where are they going?
I think they're going where they're stationed. Well, they'll be stationed when they arrive. That was how I took the note anyway.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Russ writes, the United States' withdrawal from the Iran nuclear treaty and its economic war against Iran have forced Europe into an uncomfortable position. They're reluctant to pin recent sabotage on tankers on Iran for fear of the consequences. The Europeans had no interest in the disruption of the global oil market, regardless of Iran's expansionist policies, and did not want to see the Middle East further destabilized. The outcome is the complete lack of allied support in our battle with Iran. We may, as a result, have to take on the incredibly expensive role as sole guarantor of shipping security in the Persian Gulf. Our unilateralism and short-sightedness has culminated in another colossal Middle East blunder.
I agree with the letter writer, and I think we're now in a position, if we don't step up, then we're going to leave a vacuum that's going to be filled either by China or Russia, which is going to continue to weaken our global position. So we're in a not great position right now, where compared to where we were 10 or 15 years ago. And you can't wipe your feet on your allies and then be surprised when they don't show up to help you when you ask for.
Also, this from Ken. Hasn't anyone considered that this might have been done, this is the tankers, might have been done by another state, Saudi Arabia, to increase tensions? From what I have heard, there's no clear evidence of who did attack these ships. Just saying. Says Ken.
I think there probably is clear evidence. We just have not heard it.
So the concern about like a Tonkin Gulf type event is absolutely, I think, in people's mind.
Mm-hmm.
We got this from Molly, who said, first, it's wonderful to hear Rosemary back and Alan back. Rosemary, thanks for making the effort to come back. Alan, so glad you're well enough to join the conversation. Is it possible that Trump is behaving like the classic bully he has shown himself to be? He menaces and menaces, but when his supposed victim stands up to him, he backs off. After all, he's never fired anyone face to face.
Go ahead, Rosemary. I know you're chomping at the bit on that one.
I do think he's a terrible bully. He's not just a bad president, he's a bad person.
Peter says, what worries me so much about the Iran situation is that what is needed is a measured, restrained response, but that doesn't get applause. Our president is a game show host with nuclear weapons.
Oh, that's a good letter. Ooh,
I like that one.
Good description.
All right. So we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. All right. Let's move on.
Hey, Joe, before we do, can I just, a thought that just popped into my mind, which is a little bit dangerous. You know what's equally scary about the situation is that we could potentially have a Trumpian type leader in Boris Johnson in the UK as well.
Oh, yeah.
So you start to look at it across the world.
All over the world.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Orban,
I mean,
Turkey is like that. Yeah. Turkey Thailand. Or Erdogan, yeah.
It's just kind of an ugly time to when you're looking for adult leadership at the global level.
So why is it happening globally? What is it in us, the people, democratic or not, that is allowing it to happen globally?
I think there's a lot of frustration with globalism. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who feel left behind. A lot of people mm-hmm. who feel like the global elite, the Davos crowd, has kind of not looked out for their best interest, and I think they're turning to people who seem to have a different message.
Mm-hmm. And I have a second word, one word, which is fear.
And that's part of it too. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, Chris. You're right.
Well, that's what spurred a lot of these nationalist movements that we see, everywhere, throughout many countries, including India right now, and there are also very large populations that are dealing with not only globalization and migration, but again, sort of, we're at population numbers that we've never experienced before, and I think it's just a lot of these issues are being compounded.
There's too many people. There's huge stress on resources, and that's going to get worse and worse. And humans have always gone back to this. Mm-hmm. It's scary, and we had this liberal idea that if we talk together, if we cooperate, if we globalized all of those, all the difference would disappear. In fact, they've gotten much worse. It's much easier to identify who the others are and to hate them more.
But I just want to say that I think a lot of those frustrations and fears are justified. I mean, if you go to places—
They are justified?
Well, not fears of immigrants, but frustrations about what globalism has done to communities. I mean, if you go to, you know, the industrial Midwest and look at what has happened, there's a real reason that people are frustrated.
But here's the thing, Chris. Globalization has the ability and the resources to fix those pockets. That there's no reason that that should be like throw out the whole idea of globalization with retraining, with revamping, with improvement to schools. There's money now that we've never had before.
And it's I think if you live in Metro Detroit, you could be very skeptical of the idea that globalization is somehow going to fix your. I mean, this has been going on, you know, since the 1960s, and the frustration is that nobody in Washington seemed to care what happened in those communities.
That's true, and you can say the same exact thing about sections of England, which is we saw with Brexit. That's what
all over the world.
But we could fix that. Why not go and push to say, okay, we want a piece of the pie? Why are we seeing this return to nativism and fear and things that will not help? Not only will it not help these marginalized communities, it's not going to help anybody who's helped by globalization. No one gets ahead.
Mm-hmm. President Trump said in a tweet on Tuesday that U.S. immigration agents are planning to make mass arrests starting, quote unquote, next week, an apparent reference to a plan in preparation for months that aims to round up thousands of migrant parents and children in a blitz operation across major U.S. cities. Next week, ICE will begin the process of removing the millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the United States. The president wrote, referring to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they will be removed as fast as they come in. Large-scale ICE enforcement operations are typically kept secret to avoid tipping off targets. In 2018, Trump and other senior officials threatened the mayor of Oakland, California, with criminal prosecution for alerting city residents that immigration raids were in the works. Trump and his senior immigration advisor, Stephen Miller, have been prodding Homeland Security officials to arrest and remove thousands of family members whose deportation orders were expedited by the Justice Department this year as part of a plan known as the Rocket Docket.
God, Lord. We can't.
We need to hear from Bob on this.
So, you know, we've talked a lot today about people who don't belong in the administration, and, you know, Stephen Miller is probably number one on my list. I mean, there's a person who has absolutely no business advising the president, let alone being in a government position.
And yet, he's now been there longer than anybody else, right? I mean, he's been there from the very beginning.
It's relative.
I mean, we talk about the revolving door.
Does that mean he wins the prize?
He wins the prize.
He's the survivor.
Go ahead, Bob.
We don't really know what Kushner is up to. I mean, you know, it's easy to say Miller is the worst. I would be able to go along with that. But, you know, Kushner is supposed to be crafting our Middle East, plan. That's extraordinary. This guy's, you know, he hasn't shown anything to anybody. So I don't think we should probably play the game of this one is worse than that one because they're all pretty bad.
Yeah, except, Alan, you know, in the game of betting on the racing pigs, I'll still put my money on Miller. I think he's going to win by more than a snout.
That's funny.
The problem I have with this is that you don't have the capacity to detain a million people and move a million people. That's one issue. The other part of this that I despise is that you never pre-announce that you're going to do something because it becomes less safe for the people who are in the field. I mean, mm-hmm.
He doesn't care.
Yeah,
if
tomorrow I say, listen, I'm going to run a speed trap on 85, what happens? People either don't drive 85 or they don't or they do the speed limit. I mean, you basically just made the job harder if this is what you are interested
in. Okay, but let's remember that it is this president, this guy, who has appointed all of these people. So for us to say Miller's bad, Kushner's bad, this one's bad, this guy is responsible for everything that is reporting to him. And so it's easy for us to do this, and you're all probably right about what you say, but it's really on Trump. And I must say, maybe it was my concussion, but I had a terrible thing the other day. I was sitting in the hospital, and I saw a picture of Trump addressing a group of people, and all of a sudden Mussolini's head came in and was there. That's terrible, right? That can only be chalked up to a concussion.
Concussion.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But I mean, just this claim alone, but the claim is also in tandem right now with a very large ask from the acting Homeland Security head, which is $4.5 billion on top of what spending is or is not going on with the wall. And there's no real plan on how to actually use that money. And how to execute this plan of rounding up people. There are problems with it now. So what will change next week that will make anything better or more efficient? And who's going to lead it all? Who's going to be responsible for either caring for people or if you're moving them out as quickly as they come in? That's a lot of mileage, and you know whose pockets it's going to hit? Ours. I think it's a lot of fear mongering in that statement, but at the same time, I think there's still no one kind of stepping forward and taking leadership on, we still have an issue. How are we going to solve it? We can't just talk our way out of it.
I think we may be making the mistake of taking a Trump tweet too seriously. I mean, this isn't going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. We all acknowledge that it's not going to happen.
Right, but no, but I'm saying, like, regardless
you mean the
raids? Of this...
Well, this thing about millions, rounding up millions of people, I mean, that's just not going to happen, you know? I mean, for all of Trump's tough talk, deportations are actually not really up all that much in the last few years, and they're down significantly from where they were at the height of the Obama administration. Mm. I mean, there's the rhetoric, and then there's the reality, and they often
but the reality don't meet. Is that there is a current ask on the table right now for a lot of money to again handle immigration. The bottom line is that we have to address what's happening with immigration. There's no policy of reform being put out there. There's no policy of what do we do with the people who we have in hold or who have since been released, which is more likely the case now. Mm-hmm. That's what I could care less about the rhetoric, but I do care about the dollars that are being spent on the table. What's happening in Texas, and that's the weight on the communities. So you ask anyone who lives in any border community, what the expectations are, you've got this rhetoric of fear, you've got the real just everyday expectations, and you have the grassroots organizations who are actually doing the work of trying to do something, whether it's right or wrong, but there's no cohesiveness to it.
I just reject the idea that there's any kind of crisis. People on the border keep saying to the federal government, what tragedy, what emergency. What we really need to do is not immigration, is to go back into Guatemala and Mexico and work with our allies.
Africa and India,
okay.
And many other places.
Syria, too. Why are we not taking Syrian refugees? They are educated. They are secular. They are amazing people.
Because
rejuvenate some of our communities. It's this fear thing is all artificial. Everything is artificial. We do not need more money and resources. We do not need a big program. Just let it go.
Well,
America didn't have any immigration policy for 100 years.
Well, isn't that part of the crisis, though?
There is no crisis.
Well, no, the crisis is that no one is making those decisions. No one's actually saying, like, can we smartly use these people and their resources and their talents, in a town
like
Berkshire County, where we have declining enrollments and populations and capacity and space. There is room for people and taxpayers. But again, no one's put that initiative forth.
And there is a political reason for that. Obviously, this president and Kushner and others have decided that this is not in their interest to do this. And damn the torpedoes when it comes to what's right and what makes sense. This is why these guys are so corrupt.
Yeah, but where's Schumer on this? Where's Pelosi on this?
You know where they are.
Yeah, I mean, people are protesting in the street and demonstrating against ICE and against taking people out of communities. But where are the leaders? You're right, Jen, who's saying, okay, we need people in Berkshires. We'll take 150,000.
But there are mayors and people like that who are saying things like that.
They are.
But they also need support when you have that influx.
You have to have it's leadership.
One more thing that I want to say, and that is, that those of us who live in Saratoga, those of us who live in Great Barrington, and you can add all of those other counties and other places to this, those people have all heard stories of one person who's been there for 20 years being picked up in a long black car, taken away. And so, we talk in aggregate numbers. That's one thing. But we also know the tragedy of this nonsense of taking somebody who's a tremendous part of our community away, and it really hurts everybody. Everybody is struck by that. So like when somebody dies.
Yeah, let's pull that thread for a second. I think one of the things that really bothers me about this is that it's targeting families. And you know, I feel like, you know, part of my American ideal is that we live in a country where you don't have secret police swooping in black vehicles and taking people off the street in the middle of the night or while they're in church or while they're going to the hospital. And let's call this what it is. I mean, you're talking about taking families and putting them in concentration camps and then dumping them back into environments where they're not safe. And what part of the American ideal does this represent? And exactly. I know people say, well, you know, you're too highfalutin, you're getting, you know, too high in the clouds. But this is really what aggravates me about the administration is that we're decaying what's important about this country. What made this country great are the elements that he is taking out and purposely ruining.
Wow, I can't believe you have the job you did. That was great.
Thank you.
Sounds like you're running for something.
I know. I want to vote for you.
If you're watching me on the video cam, you can tell I'm not running on for anything right now.
Well, we're very glad to have you here. I know that. But, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, I think there are definitely some systemic issues that, you know, way predate Trump when it comes to that. I mean, if you look at our criminal justice system, that's a whole other form of family disruption that we're not addressing in this country. And
Kim
and
Kardashian's that we, doing that for us.
And
now.
That's the problem, too. I mean, we can't. We have a real leadership struggle and
we don't
managing
solve problems
a population.
Anymore. Yeah, that's what you're saying. Yeah.
Thanks for summing that up, Chris. Yeah.
and that's the fault of both parties, and that somewhat goes back to what I was saying earlier about why people are dissatisfied and why they may have turned to Trump in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's just the sense that we can't solve anything, that these problems just go on and on, or that, you know, and obviously turning to Trump wasn't the right choice, but you can kind of understand the frustration that leads people to. Yes.
And again, to frame it differently, if you think about it, you know, if we have full employment the way that the administration touts their economic record, we don't have enough people to do the jobs we currently have. And if you look at our birth rates, you know, we have a declining birth rate. We need immigration. We need a good immigration policy to continue to revitalize and make this country great. But right now, you take a lot of these people, you take a million of these folks off the street, who's going to do those jobs?
Can I just say that immigration and health are not the major issues. It really is the environment. The planet is melting. And there are jobs that should be that should involve all of us, and cooperation should be global effort. That's the real issue. We never talk about it. Nobody does. The 2016 campaign didn't have environment as an issue. We're still not talking about it. We're not talking about it on this program.
Well, New York State.
New York State, yeah. We just passed a massive,
Yes, we did. New York State. Okay, that's what percentage of the planet?
Well, it's something.
Well, I think there's more to that. I mean, ask Judith, but
almost half the planet.
But again, it's about what you're making priorities to, right? And how, you know, it's definitely a lot to grapple with, because there are so many problems for so many different kinds of sectors.
I think in a sense, that goes back to what we were just saying about not solving any problems anymore. You know, we just have this inability to get anything done on anything. Mm-hmm.
Well, one last thing before we go, and that is that there's an independent report out today that shows that the Saudis were responsible in a premeditated fashion for killing Khashoggi. What do you think about that?
We already knew that. The problem is linking it directly to bin Salman.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think we knew that too, Rosemary.
And instead of standing up and condemning the action, what we did is that we did a midnight side deal to get them technologies that they shouldn't have.
There you go.
Shouldn't have access to. We've lost our moral compass.
And on those words, we'll shut down the panel discussion for the day. We'll be back tomorrow. Alan, good to hear your voice. Get well, and good to hear you. We'll hear you tomorrow.
I'm trying.
Excellent. Rosemary, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow as well. It'll be good to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, we'll
probably
negotiate.
Won't be on time tomorrow either.
Oh, great. Good. That's always helpful.
Consistent.
Bob, Chris, Jen, thanks. Thank you very much as always. Appreciate it. We'll be back after this short break.